get ready for the unidentified, the unmemorialized, and the unconventional. Get ready for the unbodied fantasy radio theater. This month's episode is titled Changing Lives and was written by Jeff Sink. A knock on the half-open door prompts a reply from my supervisor in his office. "Yes, are you here for your performance review?" he asks, and I nod. This strikes me as a little odd, as I've never come to his office for anything other than a meeting. We don't chit-chat or even acknowledge the world outside this office. The only plane my supervisor and I coexist on is held in place by project meetings and furnished with time cards, emails, and tiny design edits. Maybe that's all he knows. He could live in this office, eating in the break room, sleeping at his desk, showering in the restrooms. Does he keep it a secret, or am I the only one who doesn't know? "You can come in," my supervisor says, causing my mental exercises to fade away. He points to an industrial office chair with a green cushion, and I sit down. As my manager shuffles papers, I look at his desk, charcoal gray plastic with faux wood side panels. There's the usual smattering of photos spread across the cabinet by the hall. Maybe his family. The room is identical to the other supervisor's office, even down to the placement of the photos. I wonder if they ever get their offices confused and sit in each other's lives for just a moment. "Here it is, your information. I printed all of these off at once, so they all got mixed together." I nod, imagining him carrying the papers in one big, disheveled bundle, his arms hugging the papers as he slowly maneuvers around the obstacles in his office. He spots the green chair. "That's good," he thinks. "I'm in the right place." "So let's take a look at this." He grunts lightly during his perusal of the report. "Well, just as I thought. No issues with lateness or sick days. You haven't had any conflicts with your coworkers, and you get all your stuff in for each project on time." "That's good to hear," I say. My eyes wander over to a photo of a little girl peering from behind a tree. His daughter? "That's good to see," he says. "The only thing is, you are a little quiet in the project meetings. I know that may be how you work, but we do like to hear from some suggestions from all the members of the team every now and again." I don't say anything. If he wants me to dispute my quiet nature, I can't, especially with the silence growing between us. "I can do that," I say, even though I have no idea how I could force myself to be that assertive. Those kinds of people wear a suit that just doesn't fit me. "And I'd like to see that," my manager says. "Of course, from what I've heard around the office, you tend to be pretty quiet most of the time. Which is fine," he adds quickly, to smooth over what he just said, as if being quiet were like being called heavy or slow. "Overall, though, you're great. I hope you can continue with this pattern. Would you say you're satisfied here?" The requisite question for this occasion. "Yes, I like it here. I get to use my skills and everyone is really nice." "Oh," he says. "O" is a replacement, a benign stand-in for other words that were too offensive or direct to be allowed out. "Has someone said that I don't like it here?" My mind flips through a catalog of all my coworkers, and apart from one or two, I've never given them more than a hello. "Nobody said that, but..." He pauses. He's trying to say what he didn't say before, to coax those words back. Hopefully now they've freshened up and are more pleasant. "You aren't like the others on your team." I don't say anything. "They tend to stick around after work and use the computers for their own personal projects, but you leave at 5. You know you can use the company equipment after hours, right?" "Yes," I reassure him. "I tend to work on my own things at home." My supervisor nods. "Of course that's fine, but some of the others have said what a benefit it is to have work on their stuff here because they can get another pair of eyes on their projects. What do you work on?" I look quickly down at the floor, then at the girl behind the tree. What should I tell him? How much should I tell?
"I'm just curious," he says. "From your work you seem really creative, so I wondered how that gets manifested outside the office."
I finally force something out. "I draw," I say.
Maybe I can tire him out with brief answers.
Oh, great. Do you work on the computer or do you hand draw?
Both. He looks at me, not saying anything. He wants more. Sometimes I draw out something by hand and then I complete it on the computer.
I'd love to see your work sometime, if you felt comfortable with that.
Of course, I say, my throat tightening. I can do that. He leans back in his chair.
We could get the whole team involved. Maybe throw a little party after work and give all of you the opportunity to show off your stuff. What do you think about that?
My throat is in a vice.
Sure, I squeak.
My eyes flash to the phone on the supervisor's desk, where the time is displayed.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I have to get some photos edited for the restaurant trade magazine project I'm working on with Alex.
Oh, yes, he says. I'll stop yammering on then. My manager taps the loose papers of my report on his desk and snaps the stapler between them.
Everything looks good. Speak up a little more and think about us having a little work talent show sometime.
I am, and it's making my heart race. My manager tosses my report on his desk and opens the door for me.
Thanks again. Let Marie know I'm ready for her.
I nod and escape from his office. I find my cubicle and sit down at my own desk, staring at the black, comatose screen of my computer. The thought of bringing my drawings to work, of letting anybody see them, twists my stomach. I want my supervisor to forget about this, but I doubt he will. I think back to some pages I came up with for a failed graphic novel in college. Those might work. I can still keep my real drawings to myself. I start to feel the buzzing inside that makes me want to pick up a pencil and add to my secret collection, but my sketchbook's at home. I need to push myself through the rest of the day until I have time to draw. I stand up. I forgot to tell Marie her review was next. It was an hour later when, as I perfected the colors on a photo of a box of cereal, Alex wandered into my cubicle.
Were these photos taken in a basement? I ask, eyes on the image.
Okay, I was being so quiet just now. How did you hear me? Alex routinely found himself in my cubicle, usually after having crept down the hall and suddenly jumped out from one of the flimsy carpeted walls in an attempt to catch me unaware. I guess he expected to find me asleep or looking at porn, and therefore vulnerable to teasing. But when he inevitably saw me working, he'd become annoyed, as if I were keeping something from him that he desperately needed to know. Or maybe those were the things he routinely did at his own desk, and he was looking for someone like him to commiserate with.
I can see your reflection in my screen, I tell him. I swivel around in my chair to face him. I've got most of these images fixed.
How'd it go with the boss man? He continues before I can open my mouth. Knowing you, there wasn't much to complain about.
No, not much, I tell him. I feel compelled to connect with him in some way, so I add,
he did say I was quiet and that I should talk more.
He did? Sounds like you took a real beating in there. Want to trade my performance review for yours?
Given the number of times I'd heard an exasperated growl from the supervisor's office whenever Alex walked in 20 minutes late, I had no desire to trade places with him.
Nope.
Well, then at least tell me the secret of how you managed to stay out of trouble.
I don't get into trouble in the first place, I say.
That's crappy advice, but I know a way you can really help me out.
He looks around and then focuses on me. I feel like I'm about to be robbed.
Hey, I'm going to this concert tonight with my friend, and I need to leave a little early to get there on time, so could you take care of the rest of these photos for me so I can sneak out?
My skin starts to feel hot.
I'd ask somebody else, but you do such a good job. I know you'd get it done fast.
I don't answer. I close my eyes, partially hoping he'll just walk away. He may be going to a concert, but this is my night to draw. I haven't even opened my sketchbook in 3 days. The twitching desire starts up inside me just from thinking about drawing.
I'll handle the next batch of photos, he offers.
I open the folder containing the rest of the photos, counting up the icons. Each one represents a few minutes I'll lose tonight.
Fine.
He's already walking away from my desk.
Thanks, man. Hey, see you on Monday.
The task of editing the photos stretches long into the evening.
My sense of color is so warped by the end that the pad of sticky notes I keep on my desk seems to have morphed from green to blue. Color slowly soaks back into my world as I head out of the office. Outside, the frail November sun has already toppled down below the mountains, and beehive-shaped streetlights help sketch out the otherwise dark sidewalks. The metallic smell of winter hangs in the air. Feeling lazy, I stop by my apartment only to grab my sketchbook before returning to the cold air for food. I head to a coffee shop that has good sandwiches. The place isn't too crowded, especially for a Friday night, but I'd still rather sit away from everyone else. It's kind of overkill. The chances of me talking to anyone are slim. Like work, I haven't exchanged more than a few words with anybody here, despite seeing them on a regular basis. I just get uncomfortable with people seeing me draw. I choose my table in the corner and position the chair against the wall. I eat my sandwich and then set to drawing, placing my sketchbook with the cover tilted up to shield my drawings from any meandering eyes. With each movement of my pencil, lines are created. They pass by one another. A younger line jumps over an older one. In this connection, they grow into a roadmap of circles, falling and rising slopes, and zigzags. An image rises from the mass of pencil markings. A man sitting on a bench in the park, eating lunch. His short hair sticks up here and there from under a hat, ruffled by the autumn wind. His thick jaw is shut as he looks down, contemplating another bite of his sandwich. I put down my pencil and review the other pages of my sketchbook. The man is found on all of them. On this page, he leans against a wall, red plastic cup in hand, talking to a middle-aged man. They are discussing the upcoming election. I knew that somehow when I drew it, but short of including text bubbles above each of their mouths, I couldn't think of how to express their topic of conversation in the drawing. A half-formed voting booth looming behind them would have been too cheesy. On the next page, the man sits at a desk reviewing some papers, and, turning the page, the man now lies in bed facing a woman. The couple's eyes are open only slightly, still weighed down by the sleepiness that slowly burns away with the arrival of morning. They are whispering, but, again, how to draw that escaped me. This is a particularly intimate scene for me to draw, and I can't think of any other time when I had done something similar. Romantic illustrations aren't an interest of mine, and least of all ones between a man and a woman. I still drew it. I had to. Looking at the drawing a little closer, I'm struck by the blanket lying in waves around the couple. Don't I have a blanket like that? One with a red and white chevron pattern? I can't quite place it in my life. That blanket exists only in the lead swirls of this drawing. I check the time and rush to catch the last train home. As I brush past a table, I notice the guy sitting there, glance at my sketchbook, and then look up at me. He is about my age, with glossy brown eyes and a light beard. Had I been braver, the type of person to speak up in office meetings, for example, I might have struck up a conversation with him. But, me being me, I gawk at him for too long and then make a quick exit. I might have asked him what he was drinking or how his night was going, maybe, but that sounds like some rickety social scaffolding that could have easily collapsed. I look back to take one final glance with me, and when I see his face, an image expands in my mind. It's a road somewhere in the desert. Not asphalt, but hard-packed dirt. It lies slightly curling around a sea of sagebrush. Soft green mountains guard the horizon. It seems familiar. I bet I saw plenty of photos like it when I was Googling Utah prior to moving here. I take the image with me as I head home. In a brief, murky piercing of consciousness during the night, I seem to pull a red and white blanket up to my chin. But in the morning, only the blanket my parents gave me, the color of moss, is wrapped around me. Saturday brings with it a list of chores that I reduced to nothing by lunchtime. I return to the coffee shop for another sandwich, but this time I take my food out. There's a park nearby, the former homestead of a settler, and it is occupied by many old trees. The limbs have been turned to stone by over a century of cold winters and dry summers. I eat my lunch on a wooden bench facing a cedar-chipped path where joggers tread alone or with dogs in tow. There is light, but no heat. The itch to draw crawls into me, and I move to a picnic table located deeper in the park. The freezing wind bites at my fingers, and so I don't stay for long. Once inside my apartment, the man finds himself in my sketchbook again, seated alone in a hall. He is waiting for someone. Alex is triumphant about his weekend concert at work on Monday. He tells the others about meeting the band while I finalize a few photos. As he begins his grand parade to my cubicle, I realize my need to use the bathroom and escape down the hall. There's something strange about the mirrors in the restroom at work. They make my jaw look bigger and wider than it should be. Maybe they're tilted, so everything is distorted. I spend some time rotating my head before the mirrors, my eyes rolling side to side as I examine. When I return to my desk, Alex is gone. That night, I dream about the girl in the drawing. I see her next to me on the train, texting, her shorts riding pleasingly high on her tanned thighs. She puts her phone down and starts telling me about the movie we're about to see, and I'm trying to listen, but I can't stop thinking about my hand pressed against her shoulder as I kissed her this morning. I want to kiss her again, but maybe that'd make her uncomfortable in front of all these strangers. She stops talking, but her eyes stay on me. When the train lurches to a stop, we funnel out the doors into the sunshine. When I wake up, I stare at the vacant spot next to me in bed. I know she doesn't exist, but the realization that I'm alone here, certified by the sunlight bleeding in through the window and brightening the room, depletes me somehow. There is an ache lying deeply submerged inside me. It pricks at me. I miss her. I spend a moment trying not to move or think, and gradually the loneliness falls out of me. I grab my sketchbook and find her on the page, but seeing her doesn't move me at all. I get up, eat breakfast, and take a shower. Wiping away the condensation from the bathroom mirror, I examine my face. I may have gotten my eyes from Mom, but I totally got this thick jawline from Dad. Makes me look rugged, like a lumberjack. Yeah, I could totally be on a package of paper towels or something. I rub the water from my bristly hair and walk away to get dressed. At work, the legal brief I've been hammering out for the last 2 days is finished. I could have gotten it done earlier, but I wanted it to be so polished it sparkled. Maybe that way I can impress my boss, Mr. Aronson. I know he notices me. After all, it's only him, his partner Mr. Berg, and me in this cavernous office space. But I want to show him that I'm smart enough to handle more of the cases. I mean, I passed the bar a year ago. I'm ready. Otherwise, I think I'll go crazy sitting here all day typing things up. I place the document on Mr. Aronson's desk, which is only a few feet from mine. I receive a clipped thank you from him, and nothing else. He didn't even look up. I sit down to think of my next move. I look at Aronson, then at Berg on his computer a few feet away from me. They told me the reason our desks were placed so tightly together was that we could communicate quickly and get more work done. But I think it's because this little office space, which was the only one they could afford, doesn't have any separate rooms. If it did, they'd have taken them, leaving me outside. I bet we look pretty sad, all huddled together in this room, trying to live off the little work that the masters here can manage to scrape up. It's stupid. If they just make me a partner, I bet I could bring in more cases. But no, they don't seem to get that. I deserve to work in a place that uses my talents instead of letting them go to waste. Maybe I should start looking for another job. At home. I can't let them see me looking for jobs while I'm here at work. Right now, I need to see if there's anything else to do. Guess I have to interrupt His Majesty. Oh well. The rolling of the pencil against paper irritates me and I stop. My eyes are tired. As I bring my hands up to rub my temples, I see how the pencil has painted the edges of my hand gray. Had I been drawing that long? I fish my cell phone out of my pocket to check the time, but seeing as I can't remember when I arrived at the coffee shop, the numbers have no meaning. I stand up and walk to the bathroom to wash my hands. His thumb rides across the middle of my sketchbook, peeling away each page. He gets to a certain place and stops, his eyes bouncing around as he looks at the drawings. What are you doing? I move forward to take my sketchbook back and stop his fingers from exposing any more drawings. I was curious. He says this calmly, and as I look at him, I recall seeing him here a few days ago. That long desert road that came to me then crops up again. I feel weird, like I had something to say to him but forgot. I reclaim my sketchbook and look it over. All the pages are intact, but it feels like something's been taken away. Who is he? He asks. Who? The guy in the drawings. Is he a friend of yours, or... I close the book. No, it's just a drawing. I start to feel hot. Should I be talking about this with him? You mean you didn't base him off somebody you know? He asks. I shake my head. My skin tingles. The hair on my arm is almost standing up. He's nobody, I tell him. Well, I think he's somebody, the stranger says. There's a life in those lines. Can't you see it? I don't know. I open the book again. The man sits at the center of a cluster of three desks. There's work before him, but he's staring passively out the window. When I look at these drawings, I feel like I could tell you about him, like he's a character I made up, but I never thought about him being real. I look down at my own hand and realize that the tingling feeling is gone. Maybe talking with a stranger drove it away. Characters are real, the stranger says. It's limited, but they have lives just like us. They have personalities, places to exist in, things to do. I never really thought of it that way, I admit. My mind stretches the idea, examines the strength of its substance. That would mean there's a lot of creation going on in the world. Whenever somebody starts writing or drawing, a character is born. Makes you wonder where they go when the story is deleted or the page gets torn up. The man and the woman appear in my mind, and I grip the sketchbook to assure myself it's still in my hands. What are you thinking? The stranger asks, and I cringe. My thoughts might seem weird to him. Where do you think these ideas to create these characters come from? I ask. From what already exists. We take attributes of things we see around us, and then we tweak that just a little. I bet you find bits of yourself in your drawings. I say, the words slowly trailing out of my mouth. You don't? No, I say. He waits for more, but I don't say anything. I can't think of a way to explain my feelings in a neat, clean manner. My silence seems to sting the stranger. He looks away, running his fingers over his chin. Well, I was just curious, he says, shrugging. At that moment, I realize it. He's going to walk away. He's deciding this isn't going anywhere, so he wants to escape. I don't want him to leave. He's nosy, sure, but he's pretty cute, too. It's hard for me to put it into words, I say quickly and loudly. A woman sitting at an armchair looks at me. I've never talked about this with anyone. I just need to figure out how. Take your time. I think... I begin, the thought still forming in my mind, that in a lot of ways these drawings are different from what I used to do. Before, when I drew people, I would see bits of my personality in them. But with this guy, I don't feel that way. It doesn't look like the stranger is going to leave now, so I take a deep breath. I don't see myself in him at all. He likes things that I don't. I mean, for one thing, he's in love with this girl, and I don't even like girls. I don't relate to him, but I keep drawing him. Why? I start to feel this irritation inside when I don't draw, and when I sit down with my sketchbook, I only think of drawing him. And lately I've wanted to draw so I could see what the next illustration will be. I need to see it for the irritation to go away. But you know what the next drawing will be. You're drawing it. I never know until I sit down and start sketching what the drawing will be. I think about it, wonder, but it could be anything. And if I try to draw the man in some other way than I'm feeling, it doesn't work. The proportions never look right. I look away. I feel crazy, I say. It's just an unusual situation, the stranger answers. And life in general is crazy. You want to draw this man for whatever reason. Do you ever think about him when you aren't drawing? No, I tell him, but I remember the dream with the girl. So either you'll start thinking about him more and more, or nothing will happen. Why am I drawing him? I ask. I think you'll find out. But I don't want to, I think. I'd rather force my hand to draw spaceships or bunnies than continue, because I know that eventually this will change. This will grow, maybe into something I can't handle anymore. I bet he's just somebody I see every day, I say. Maybe he works in the same building as me, or I pass by him every day on the street. A brief image, thin as tissue paper, flutters up in my mind. Me waiting for an elevator with a girl. But I look different, just slightly. The image falls away as quickly as it came. Are you worried about the drawings? The stranger asks. In his eyes, I see the desert road again. Yes, a little. Well, the stranger starts, then pauses. It's as if his words are reluctant to come out. If you need someone to talk to, you'll find me here. I wonder if he means it. I could ask him to meet me here on another day, but he might only show because he feels bad for me. I'd rather risk not seeing him again than get into some sort of pity friendship. Okay, I need to get home, I tell him, backing up. I'll see you around then, he says. Good luck. I nod. As I move away, I back into an empty chair. It lets out a gravelly whine as it scrapes across the floor. My hand shoots out to balance myself, but it's no good and I almost fall over. My face blossoms with red. I try to laugh, but it just sounds like I'm breathing hard. Good night, I manage to say before I hurry out the door. He saw my drawings. The realization soaks in as I walk briskly home, the cold night air stripping away the heat from my exposed hands. I curl them into my sleeves before resting them in my pockets. Seeing him there, leafing through my sketchbook, I had felt so cheated at first. Invaded. But it felt right to talk about it. I needed to tell someone. Maybe if I had a best friend, I might have told them. But the next best person is a perfect stranger. If he thinks I'm nuts, at least we don't have anyone in common with he could tell. He didn't seem like that kind of person anyway. I hope he's not that kind of person. As I think about the stranger, I see the road. Where is that road? I thought it was a picture I'd seen, but it feels like I was actually there, going down that road. I could have passed down it on my way to Salt Lake. It should fit somewhere in my memory, but I can't determine where. It's not long before my feet hit the familiar steps up to my apartment. In the night, I wake up and she's not here. I'm still partially intoxicated from the deep sleep I've just abandoned, but as my arm swipes across the bed, I can tell that she's gone. I sit up. I swear she went to bed with me, but she might be in the living room studying. Just thinking about those dry, pedantic books she must be reading makes me uneasy. If I had known back then how boring being a lawyer would be, I could have gone into something more interesting. I'd be someplace else now and much happier. But maybe she'll enjoy the law routine. She'll be well prepared. She studies all the time. What time is it, anyway? She should get to bed. I can't sleep when she's not here. That dresser over there looks funny. I squint at it, but it's hard to make out in the room, brightened only by the milky red light coming in from the window. It shouldn't be over there by the door. Did she move it while I was sleeping? We fought a little over where the furniture would go, but she wouldn't change things around while I slept, I think. I turn to get out of bed, and as I drop my feet to the floor, they hit something cold and I bring them back up. I look down and reach out to feel the grooves in the wood of the floor. I collapse back into bed. We don't have hardwood floors. We specifically rented this place because it was carpeted. That's what she wanted. So am I someplace else? My heart speeds up. I lean over to turn the bedside lamp on, but it's not there, and for a second I lose my balance, bringing my elbow down painfully hard on the empty table. Standing up, I spot the switch for the overhead light. I flick it on, and after a few painful seconds my eyes adjust to the light. My coat's draped over a chair, but I don't know why it's there. I always hang it up. And actually, it's not my coat at all. It doesn't look anything like my coat. Why did I think it was mine? Nothing in this room is familiar to me. There's no table where I put my wallet and keys, no computer desk, and all these books aren't mine. I run my shaking hand over my hair. I don't know where I am, but it's not my apartment. If I've been brought here, I have to figure out how to get away before they come back. And where is she? I open the door and listen for any movement. Things are quiet. I go out into the hallway. I come into a room and find alien corners, foreign angles. I have no idea where I am. Shadows slide across the room and I dive to escape them. Fear wraps around me. I need to get out of here, but I can't move. The fear keeps washing over me. Someone else is here in this room. He's here. I can't look around. I don't want to see him. Maybe he brought me here, I don't know, but I don't want him to find me. I close my eyes and listen to my breathing, though that doesn't even sound like mine. I'm trapped. I gotta get out of here. I gotta escape. I have to go. Through the sensation of my head propped uncomfortably against the leg of my couch, I realize that I'm in my living room. I pick myself up from the floor. Scraps of a dream appear to me. I was lost. Only it wasn't me, really. I was playing someone else. He was lost. He was terrified. I push myself to remember more of the dream, but I can't think of anything else. I walk over to the window, where clean white light fills the room. Outside, it is snowing. I can't find my car in the storm. Everything is covered in the fluff of new snow, and it takes several swipes of my gloved hand to check if any of these mounds are what I'm looking for. Through the web-like screen of falling snow, I see my neighbor, and, embarrassed, I ask her if she's seen my car. She looks at the car beside us, hesitates, and then points to it. I had just examined and disregarded it, but as I circle it and uncover the license plate, it's mine. I run my hand down the side of the car to reveal its blue color. I turn to offer my neighbor a sheepish thank you, but she's already down the street. I open the door, snow dusting the car seat. As I brush off the snow, I wonder how I didn't recognize my car. I've had it for years. This is even the place I normally park it. For whatever reason, I was looking for a different car, although now that I think about it, I can't recall exactly what I was looking for. It's the storm. It makes everything look the same. I drive off to work. The roads are glazed with ice, and it takes all of my concentration and skill to make it to work. As I walk in, my supervisor is standing outside his office. "You made it here safe," he says. Looking around, I can see the office is largely empty. "Yes," I say while nodding, droplets of water from my hair flying around. "And I can get you that deposition before your meeting with Mr. Dixon this afternoon." "What deposition?" I've just asked myself the same thing. "Is this a new project you're working on?" No, I say, smiling. "Sorry, that was a bit weird." I have no clue where those words came from, and no way to explain them, but I have to say something. "I've been watching a lot of crime shows lately," I tell him, "so I guess that's where that came from." We both laugh, but I can tell from the extra effort he makes to smile broadly that my supervisor is hiding his confusion. "I got that other project done so I can work on something new if you'd like," I offer. "Great, because actually," he says, "Alex just called in sick, again, and he was going to help me with this new campaign. I think it could turn out better with you in charge. In fact, your work looks much less forced. Come see me in about 15 minutes and I'll give you the details." I go down to the deli on the corner to meet her for lunch. She comes, textbooks cradled in her left arm. "You should give that up," I tell her. Go into some other field where you'll be happier. She waves away my warning and sits down. I suggest that she could open a bakery, citing the chocolate cake she made for me for my birthday as evidence of her potential for success. Only hipsters open bakeries nowadays, she tells me. I say that's reason enough for her to start one, and she punches me in the stomach, hard enough to tell me to stop teasing her. She could be tired from class. She could be sick of me telling her to change majors, too. I don't blame her, but I don't want her to be disappointed when she gets out into the real world and finds herself glued to a desk doing other people's work to make them look intelligent. I need her to understand that. And a bakery could be fun. I drop that topic, though, deciding to pick up the battle at another time. She must eat quickly before returning to class, and I'd rather she didn't leave mad at me. I remind her of our trip to California at the end of the semester. That's too far away for her to think about, she says, and I can tell her mind is already switching back to school. Before she leaves, I buy her a cookie. She places it atop her pile of books and then disappears. I head back to work, the realization coming to me that the rest of the day is going to drag. I'm at my desk, staring at my computer. On the screen are the photos for the latest job, but I'm staring at the clock, the seconds building up slowly. 5 minutes, 43 seconds. Now, 5 minutes, 45 seconds. Almost 6 minutes since I came to. I don't remember anything that happened from when I took off my coat this morning until those 6 minutes, six and a half almost now, when it felt like I'd come back to life again. It was as if time, like a string, had gotten tangled, placing the morning and the evening side by side. I watch the seconds march by, wondering if time will get tangled again. Or if I'm being open to all possibilities, I may have blacked out, though that doesn't explain why I'm sitting by my computer. Or why, now that I consider it, I have the same feeling as when I woke up this morning in the hallway, not understanding how I had gotten there. My palms are sweaty, my eyes dry and raw from staring at the clock. It feels like a part of me is missing. I think back to the morning, finding my car in the snow and talking to my boss. But next to that conversation is a cliff falling away to nothing. If I stayed here at work, there must be some sign of what I was doing. I tear my eyes away from the computer and look around. Everything seems normal until I look down at my shoes. They're wet. I get up and look out to the window on the far wall, where I can see the snow-carpeted city. I must have gone out. For lunch, which would make sense because I didn't bring anything with me. Maybe I went to that deli down the street. A memory rolls into my mind. I had a bowl of chili with cornbread, and she had a veggie sandwich. I told her she'd be hungry later if she didn't eat more, but she wouldn't get anything else. That's why I bought her the cookie. I see her walking away after lunch. She freezes, her figure draining to gray lines before disappearing. This memory doesn't fit quite right. Reaching down for my bag, I pull out my sketchbook and turn to the last drawing. I spot her, standing with a cookie wrapped in a napkin on top of her books. Below is a smaller illustration of her and the man seated at a table eating. It was this image that made me think I'd gone to lunch with her. Somehow it made me believe I was that man. I look through the rest of the pages, but I can't find any drawing of the man searching for his car in the snow. There is, however, an illustration of the man carrying a bunch of papers to a lawyer at a desk. How I know he's a lawyer, or that the papers are a deposition, or that a man named Mr. Dixon will be coming to pick them up soon, I can't explain. These thoughts feel as substantial to me as coming into work this morning or the day I graduated from college. They have the same texture and weight. I'm reluctant to close the book. It feels wrong somehow. I run my fingers around the lines that comprise the man, and I feel better. I close the book and leave the office. I walk downtown. I had hoped the exercise would make me feel present and awake, but instead I feel light, as if I might jump out of my body at any moment. The drawings are appearing before me, the man at a grocery store with the girl. I could return to her. She's waiting in the apartment she and I share. This desire pulls at me, and it's as if my feet are rising off the sidewalk. I want to see her, even though we had lunch together just a few hours ago. I wonder if she knows how much I'm twisted around her finger. I can't let her know or she'll get a big head. When I come home, I'll ignore her for a moment or two, and then I'll hug her and ask her how she was doing. She'll know I was just kidding. There's a vibration in my pocket, and I find myself across from the coffee shop. I take my phone out, but I don't catch the call in time. The number's unknown and they don't leave a message, but I'm more concerned with how I got this far without remembering. I keep focus enough to make it to the entrance to the coffee shop. I reach out for the door, and in the glass I see the reflection of the man. He steps back as I do, raises the same hand, and in that moment I realize it's actually my own reflection. I quickly open the door. I stand inside the coffee shop, recognizing the people behind the counter and the few regulars spread out at tables. These are my memories. I feel more rooted in myself. How's the drawing coming along? It's the stranger standing beside me. We look at one another. I see that desert road again. I wonder what he sees. Something's wrong, he says. The man in the drawings, I say. I'm starting to feel like I'm him. You find yourself in him, in his character, the stranger says. Or like I find myself in his memories, I tell him. I remember something so vividly, and then I look in my sketchbook and find it there. It really happened to the man, not me. The stranger points to my bag, and I fish out my sketchbook and hand it to him. He takes it to a table and begins leafing through it as he sits down. I follow. And this worries you? I hesitate. My hands fall to my lap, and I interlock my fingers together, twisting them one way and then another. I feel like I'm playing out his life. He's replacing my memories with his. I don't know where I've been today, but I know he had lunch with that girl and then went back to work. His work at a law office. I start to bounce my leg up and down. I feel a little sick. The stranger puts the book down. But that's not all of it, he says. There's something else. How can you tell? I ask. Your eyes wiggle around when you're nervous about saying or doing something, the stranger says. He and I look at one another. He is perceptive. I generally think of myself as being more closely guarded than this. Maybe I unknowingly expose some gear or bit of machinery that shows how I work from time to time. He seems to brush it off. A lot of people do that, the eye thing, he says. I just noticed. But is there something else? Yeah. I might as well tell him all of it. When I think about the man, I start to get this strange feeling. It's like I'm being lifted away. I pause, that same light feeling swelling in my body. I see the man walking up a flight of stairs. Where do you go? The stranger's question brings me back. I don't know. I try not to let that feeling stay in me too long. Try thinking about him now. His words make me feel light. I don't think I want to do that. I think it could help you figure out what's going on. Close your eyes and try to see what he's doing right now. Tell me when you know. I take a deep sigh. I'll be right here with you. Just try it. He looks at me. I twist my fingers in my lap. My eyes bounce down to the sketchbook and then back at him. He's still looking at me intently. I tilt my head down and close my eyes. Tell me when you know where he is, the stranger says. I imagine the drawing of the man and the woman at lunch. I see his plate speckled with crumbs. But they aren't eating lunch, I hear myself say. They'll be home by now. The light feeling invades my body. I am rising up through the ceiling of the coffee shop. Grayness is smeared across my vision, but it gradually fades away. She's looking at me, head tilted. She calls me a space cadet and gets up from the table to wash her bowl in the sink. That's what my mom used to call me when I stared out the window instead of listening to my aunt tell us another story about her trip to St. George. I didn't have ADHD as a kid, but being subjected to the fourth retelling of a story from my aunt tended to make the birds in the trees very interesting. That could be what happened just now, though I can't remember if what we were talking about was really that dull. I look down at the melted pool of ice cream in the bowl next to me. I don't remember this either. I blink hard. She asks me if I'm okay. I tell her that I'm just tired from work, and I go to lie down. I pause in the hallway. When she looks back at me strangely again, I tell her I was just trying to remember if I had locked my car before coming up, but really, I had to remind myself which direction our bedroom was in. For a second, it felt like I didn't know. My body rattles and my eyes fly open. I just wanted to wake you up, the stranger says. I rub my face. How long was I out? Just a minute or so. Did I move at all? I look around me. No bowl with melted ice cream. You were a stone. Did you find him? He was having ice cream in his apartment with the woman, I tell him. But it was strange because he seemed as disoriented as me. He didn't remember how he'd gotten there. None of his memories felt that way before. Whatever this is, it's gotten out of the drawings. And it's happening to him, too. I begin to twist my fingers again. He could be getting my memories, I say. The stranger looks at me, nodding slowly. So these blackouts could be memories being transferred to the wrong person. I get his and he gets mine. There could be a cross, the stranger says. I think there's some sort of connection between the two of you. Maybe it's not fully formed yet, so there's some loss. What are you going to do? I don't know if there's anything I can do, I tell him. There is a jitteriness pulsing through me. Then do nothing. I feel like I'm about to rise up out of the coffee shop again. What if he takes my memories and erases me? It's just as likely that you'd erase him. I look down at the sketchbook. I could get rid of these drawings. He doesn't exist in the drawings, the stranger says. This book was just the first link. You can burn it, but you'll still remember him. I feel like I might throw up. You're really confused right now, the stranger says, and it may feel like the right thing to do to push him away, but maybe this is happening for a reason. Let it happen. The blood is vacated from my face and I feel cold. My breath is ragged. Or stay this way, trying to fight something stronger than you. He stands up and walks away. The man appears in my thoughts again. I'm being lifted up out of my chair by that light feeling. My eyes dance around the room, trying to focus on anything. I describe what I see. I come to the glass case full of desserts, and the memory of the girl rolls in again. I bite my lip to focus on the sting. I stand up and stumble out of the coffee shop. As I walk, everything around me triggers the foreign memories. I see the restaurant we went to after she came back from visiting her parents. A man working in a clothing store is wearing the same glasses as me. But I don't wear glasses, and I've never been to that restaurant. I keep repeating these truths, hoping it will dissolve these other memories. They remain firmly entrenched. I become lighter in my own skin. I come to a building and I nearly tear free of my body. I tell myself that I don't know this place. It has no hold on me. But embedded inside me is a long woven memory of this door, the washed out lighting of the lobby, and the elevators leading up to where she and I live. The memory starts to rise and unfurl, spreading over me. I become lighter, being pulled up into the night. The collision catches me completely off guard, and I crumble to the sidewalk. The group of guys stops briefly to regard me lying in the snow. One of them apologizes for bumping into me. Another laughs. They continue down the street. I pick myself up, flicking away the snow clumped to my side. I'm a little embarrassed, but I don't wait around to explain myself. I make it back to my apartment and fall into my couch. I'm relieved I made it here safely, although the thoughts are still with me, and it won't be much longer before I feel that terrible sensation again. I'll have to fight it all night, pushing away the memories that are gradually digging in, searching to take hold and tear me away. Eventually they'll seep down deeply enough, and I'll slip away again and I see her asleep in the bed we share. She's blurry, though, and as the moonlight splashes around her, she is terrifying. I try to think of something else. I attempt to remember the street I grew up on, but its image is shifting around me. Massive trees sprout up by the sidewalk, only to be paved over by concrete parking spots. Brick apartment buildings shiver into aluminum-sided suburban homes, and then back again. None of it is mine. My best friend arrives, but he's someone I've never seen before. I can't even recall the way my own face looks. I try to fly away, moving further into the gray expanse. My mind stretches outward and stops. I shouldn't try to get away from this. I should go back to her. I'm exhilarated by the thought of falling down and letting these memories take me up. Letting go. I see her again and I reach out. I feel myself being lifted up past the woman. That other world, the other places, the other childhood, family and friends, and her rush up around me, wrapping around me, and it feels so good. He's sitting at the same table, the one in the corner I used to sit at and draw. He notices me, but his face is calm. "You aren't surprised to see me," I say. He shakes his head. "I knew you'd figure things out and come back here." I sit down next to him. "But how do you know I am who you think I am, and not someone else, the man in the drawings?" The stranger winces, his face turning a slight red. Something in my words made his skin itch. "I can tell it's you," he says. He takes a prolonged breath and returns to his pre-embarrassed color. "But what happened exactly?" "I finally accepted those other memories. I allowed myself to be taken up by them. He did, too." I pause. That word feels strange on my tongue. "And now they're ours, his and mine." "All of those memories belong to both of you," the stranger asks, though the surprise is absent from his voice, as if he knew this already and was just confirming it with me. "Yes, I've had two childhoods. I have two lives running alongside each other. As time builds up around me, I can see things from my eyes and his as well. Vice versa, too." The stranger smiles. "How does it feel?" "It's like seeing a photo from a birthday party you'd forgotten. Suddenly strangers turn into friends and you remember everything. Well, it's like that amplified 1,000 times. "So that's why you haven't been around," the stranger says. "You've been recovering from your amplification." "It has been a few weeks since I last saw the stranger, but I hadn't been recovering. I'd been gathering up my courage to return here." "Do you still find him in your drawings?" "No." "So what do you draw now?" I put my arm over my bag. "Just stuff." "Can I see?" I politely chuckle. "I don't know, it's kind of personal," I tell him. "Do you keep it a secret from your friends as well?" "I don't have friends," I say, realizing too late the awkward social implications of my words. I might as well have spit out a dead fish. "I just moved here a few months ago, and I know people, just not that well." If he asks me to name a friend, I'm screwed. "It takes me a while to warm up to people. I don't think I would have met you if you hadn't come over here yourself and started rifling through my sketchbook." "We would have met someplace else," he says, adding, "the city's not that big." I nod. "Still, it was nicer to meet you sooner rather than later." I look at him, the desert road barely visible behind the brown of his eyes. "Yeah," I manage to say. I look at his eyes. They are pretty. And I try to force myself to say something else. There is a pause drooping down between us as it gets heavier and heavier. "I like to make friends." Oh God, was that all I could come up with? His lips curl upward. He's forcing down laughter, like a sober friend trying to rein in his drunken companion. "Hopefully we can be good friends," he says. He stands up. "I'm happy that you're okay. See you around." I watch him leave. Despite my stumbling, I still feel better at having seen the stranger. I can't think about anything more with him, though. Not yet. Too much daydreaming tends to distort what really is between two people. I get out my sketchbook and turn to the page I was working on earlier. It's not perfect yet, but with some work I could get the consistency of the road and the slopes of the mountains just right.
You've
just heard Changing Lives, another story of the unbodied. Want more of the unbodied? Go to theunbodied.com. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.